The Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast is back. What's going on, everyone? I am your co-host, Arthur Arcus, joined as always by Bob Laguerre, and we have plenty to discuss on this Thursday. And no, it's not Masters or Cubs Brewers, Bob. There's plenty of Bears news to get to. Where should we start?
Well, I think a good place to start is always with Kyle Long, because for the last 3 years now, that's been a huge question mark. Obviously has played well when he's been in the lineup, but has missed 14 games, I think it is, in the last two seasons. You would think that the Bears are confident that he's going to be back because they parted ways with Josh Sitton. I don't think they'd go into a season lacking a starter at either guard spot. And we saw Kyle Long earlier this week when he received the Ed Block Courage Award. Looked great, seemed really optimistic, and talked as if he was going to be absolutely full go by the start of the season and probably before that. But he did admit he's had three surgeries in the offseason. So, I guess we're going to have to wait and see. He can be as optimistic as he wants, but until he actually gets on the field and starts having 300-pound guys run into him, we won't know for sure.
All right, so you met with Kyle Tuesday, and congrats to Kyle on winning the Ed Block Courage Award, a very worthy recipient of that honor. That was April 3rd, Tuesday. You're saying he was scheduled to have three surgeries this offseason, or he has already undergone all three of them and is in the recovery process?
He's already had three.
Wow, okay.
I believe shoulder, elbow, and neck. Neck was the crucial one. Right. He said that he didn't know the exact jargon and the medical terms, but he said his neck essentially was not aligned as it should be. And he said that was causing a lot of problems he had with his shoulder. I guess weakness, because it was there was a nerve involved, and so he had some weakness in his one shoulder. He also, that's the same shoulder he had a labrum tear that he played with all of last season, I believe it was. So he looked great. Seemed like he was ready to go, and I'm assuming he's going to be a participant in most of the off-season stuff, because it's none of that is contact related. But I think there's, the Bears are pretty confident that he's going to be back, because they let Sitton go. They've got Cody White here who could play guard, but if they move him from center to guard, then it leaves another gap at center. I don't know if Jaronis Grassou is the guy to fill that gap. But going forward, I think just talking to Kyle created a lot of optimism as far as him being healthy for this year, which he hasn't been since the 2015 season.
All right, Bob, I don't want to ask you to moonlight as a doctor here, and I'm not going to ask you to play fortune teller either. But from someone who has covered the duration of Long's career, we know that he can wear his emotions on his sleeve. We know that it has been an arduous process for him since his start in three consecutive Pro Bowls to begin his career. How did you sense yesterday? It sounds like there's plenty of optimism. Let me ask, has he always been that way? Or in my opinion, at least, he's been a guy who it's pretty easy to see when he's frustrated for injuries and other reasons. And do you think that maybe that is, leads to additional optimism this time around, and just seeing how positive he seems to be?
Yeah, I think he's always been pretty transparent. And when things haven't gone well, it was easy to tell. And then he freely admitted it when things weren't working out, when he wasn't recovering as quickly as he should. The ankle thing, which was goes back, I think, 2 years now, was a problem that he started the season with that, and you could tell it still wasn't 100%. And I think not only his body language, but he admitted that he was not playing at 100%. He was still favoring it, even though he had received clearance to return. At that point, I think part of it is mental, because you don't trust it. You're not confident that it will hold up in a game situation. And you could tell even when he returned to the field, you would see from time to time he would limp a little bit and favor it. And, I think that is far enough in the past now that is no longer an issue. So that, I think, is the main thing. The neck and the ankle are the primary concerns. He really referred to the other procedures as minor and kind of just sloughed them off like, it was just, a cleaning up type of thing. And it comes with the territory, and he knows what he signed up for. And, he was, he doesn't do a good job of masking his emotions, and he was clearly excited and looking forward to getting back into the program, not just because he's healthy, but also because he said that Matt Nagy has brought an unbelievable atmosphere to Hallis Hall, and guys are anxious to get going and anxious to play, and it seems like most players feel that way. From what we've heard rumors lately, maybe Jordan Howard isn't one of those guys, though.
Right, yeah, we're going to get there for sure. He's Bob Legere. I'm Arthur Arkush. This is the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. We will visit here in a little bit with Hub Arkush as well, but right now chatting with Bob, who was at the AdBlock Courage Award banquet Tuesday, talking with Kyle Long, the winner of that award this year. And Bob alluded to some Jordan Howard, I think, unrest on behalf of Bears fans. He removed all the Bears photos from his Instagram account. Bob, I'm kind of embarrassed to admit, I think if there's any of the three of us on this podcast who should be expected to have an Instagram account and be able to check in on, keep tabs on Jordan Howard, it's me, and I'm not. I don't kind of meet that requirement, so I have to apologize to the listeners. But I have been able to gather that Jordan Howard has removed all the Bears photos from his Instagram account, and from being on Twitter and from taking the pulse of Bears fans, it sounds like there is a lot of... Well, I said unrest before, but how surprised should we be? There's been rumblings about maybe Jordan Howard not being a fit in the Matt Nagy offense here for at least a month now.
Yeah, to me, fit or no fit, scheme, whatever, Jordan Howard's a guy who's been very impressive, averaged over 5 yards a carry as a rookie. Last year, that dipped quite a bit. He was still, I think, at 4.3. In an offense that really didn't have a passing attack. It was kind of a gear to stop him with 8 men in the box on a regular basis. I don't know that the Bears, at this point, whether Jordan Howard fits or not, can walk away from a guy that's gone over 1,100 yards in each of his first two seasons, especially when there really isn't much behind him. Tariq Cohen had a great rookie season. He's not a bell cow back, a guy that's going to carry 20 times a game by any stretch of the imagination. He's a compliment to a guy like Jordan Howard. They also recently re-signed Benny Cunningham, who throughout his career has been primarily a pass receiver out of the backfield and an exceptional special teams guy. He's also undersized and not a guy who's going to carry 20 times a game. So unless the Bears think Saquon Barkley is going to drop to him in the first round, I think it would be hard to move away from Jordan Howard at this point.
Yeah, we're in absolute agreement on this one, Bob. I have been very impressed with what has occurred so far under the Matt Nagy watch, under Ryan Pace and Nagy together this offseason. But I want to be extremely clear. If the Bears were to trade Jordan Howard, to me, that would be the first big red flag on this regime, because it would tell me that there's a little bit too much rigidness in the scheme if you can't fit a back-to-back, whatever, 1,000-yard, 1,100-yard runner into that scheme. I have a hard time signing off on that, because I think good football players are good football players, and it's the coach's jobs to find roles for them.
Yeah, unless you've got a plan B that we don't know about, and, who knows? Maybe they do. Maybe they. This is just the first domino to fall in a grand plan.
Right.
When we don't have access to players at this time of the year, they started their off-season program, but we don't have access to any of that or even know what attendance is for the most part. So it's hard to make sense of it, and it's hard to figure out where they could be going with this. They really, if there's a successor to Jordan Howard for the Bears, he's not on the roster right now. And I don't think they want to go into the draft with another need, since they've already got serious needs at edge rusher and in the interior offensive line, probably. And they, everybody could always use another cornerback. So, to me, it makes no sense. And who knows? Maybe there is nothing to this.
Yeah, that's the important part there at the end, Bob, is we haven't been able to confirm or deny what all this means. There are national reports suggesting everything is fine on the Bears front, and that this is it's really basically a non-story. But again, last month there was a report that the Dolphins and the Bears were involved in trade talks surrounding Jarvis Landry and Jordan Howard. Obviously, that didn't come to fruition. And I believe there were rumblings even dating back further than that maybe Howard's pass-catching limitations wouldn't be a good match for Matt Nagy's offense. But again, I have to scratch my head because, as you mentioned correctly, that's what Tariq Cohen's specialty is. That's what Benny Cunningham's specialty is. So it just seems to me that they might have really nice carved out roles here. And I'm not saying that the Bears shouldn't, if they feel strongly about it, tap into what's looking like a great draft at the running back position. Of course, all Bears fans know Jordan Howard was a fifth rounder, I want to say, with the 151st pick or something crazy like that. So it's not like you can't find these guys. But I don't know. I think they need to be very careful here. So we'll see. Bob, I want to jump back to the Kyle Long discussion. We're kind of going back and forth a little bit, and offer up this take and get your thoughts on it. All the excitement surrounding the Allen Robinsons, the Taylor Gabriels, the Trey Burtons of the world, Cam Meredith's and Kevin White's potentially coming back healthy, Jordan Howard and Tariq Cohen in new offenses. Is there a more important Bear on offense than Kyle Long this season? Other non-quarterback. Obviously, it all spins around Mitch Trubisky. But how much is dependent on seeing the healthy Kyle Long again and having him stabilize this offensive line?
Yeah, if you're trying to build a pocket and allow Mitch Trubisky to step up in the pocket, move in the pocket, run some of the RPO stuff we've heard about, I think that interior offensive line is crucial. And as we said, that they're already looking to fill one gap and to replace Josh Sitton. Eric Cush is a guy they liked last year going into the season, but I think they liked him more as a swing guard and not a guy that they wanted to necessarily start 16 times through the course of the season. So, as we said, the Bears have plenty of holes to fill without creating another one. So if they can put Kyle Long in, and we know when he's healthy, he's a Pro Bowl caliber player, you know, that's one other area they don't have to worry about. And, you know, you play him next to Cody White here or with those two guys at guard, and you've got two-thirds of an exceptional interior offensive line. I don't know that anyone considers the Bears' offensive tackles to be above average, maybe a little bit, but, you know, Charles Leno on the left side, Bobby Massey on the right have done an okay job. I don't know that those are the two guys that are going to get you to the playoffs or to the Super Bowl ultimately. Bobby Massey's only got a year left on his deal, so Kyle Long is crucial, and what people don't seem to realize, and it was kind of surprising to me, is that before the Bears signed Chase Daniels, the backup quarterback, Kyle Long was the oldest guy in the team at 29 years old, or at least on the offense. So he's not a young man anymore, but he's not really to the age where he should, his play would start to decline. So I think if you get him back 100%, he's a Pro Bowl player, and that's a great place to start if you're building an offensive line around a quarterback who really is going to make your offense go, and who definitely not only has to have weapons, which they've addressed that, he needs to have protection. And last year, I don't know that he got the kind of protection he's going to need to really flourish in this offense. So, yeah, Kyle Long to me is a huge piece of the puzzle.
Bob mentioned Bobby Massey out on the right edge. Bears look to potentially replace him just 1 year into that deal. Last offseason, fell short in the Rick Wagner pursuit. He obviously ended up with the Lions. I only mentioned Massey because the Bears went back to the Arizona Cardinals offensive line well this week for another depth piece in Earl Watford. Bob, I always have to chuckle when teams are kind of poaching really bad offensive lines. Eric Cush is a good example, but I'll tell you what, Cush exceeded all expectations 2 years ago after he wasn't good enough to play for Jeff Fisher, so I have to laugh at that type of stuff. But let me ask you, it looked like there were a couple other really good quotes from Kyle Long's availability Tuesday. Tell the listeners kind of how he gushed about Mitch Trubisky and kind of your impressions of that.
Yeah, it's mostly, when Kyle Long talks about Mitch Trubisky, it's mostly intangible type stuff. He said, this guy just has an aura around him and a sense that when he's in the huddle, regardless of the situation, he's not flustered, he's not panicked, he's calm, he makes the right decisions. And when you can do that as a rookie, especially a rookie who only started 13 games in college, that bodes well for the future. And if he's coming in as an inexperienced guy, And he's building that kind of confidence in older guys, veterans like Kyle Long, then, you know, the Bears may be, I don't know that we can say for sure, but a lot of indications are that the Bears do have their quarterback in the future. And in today's NFL, that's at least half of the ball game. You know, once you've got that guy, everything else kind of falls into place. And I don't know that we can say guys like Allen Robinson and Trey Burton and Taylor Gabriel came to the Bears because of Mitch Trubisky. I think bottom line, in 90% of these cases, guys move to different teams because of the money. That's the right. one and only concern. But I think if you have a bad situation at quarterback, I think guys will shy away from that situation and look to go elsewhere. I don't think these guys that they signed had any hesitation with joining in a program that Mitch Trubisky was actually going to be the face of going forward, probably for a long time.
Wait, so you're saying that maybe the rumors about Mitch Trubisky are a little different than the ones about Jay Cutler, Bob?
Yeah,
perhaps.
The sense that the players have gotten from Mitch Trubisky and from guys who have played with Mitch Trubisky and guys in the league talk is that if the guys in his locker room are behind him 100%, that's a big part of the puzzle. Okay, you're gonna, if this is a guy who can lead not only on the field but off the field, I think you're well on your way in today's NFL. This is a guy who, and really, I'm not ready to anoint Mitch Trubisky as a Hall of Famer or as a quarterback for the next 10 years, but I think he did a lot of things as a rookie with a really poor supporting cast that would make you excited for the future if you're a Bears fan.
Yeah, no doubt, and I don't mean to vilify Jay Cutler either. He gets a worse rap than he has deserved around here for a long time, but I think it's noteworthy that after however a decade in Chicago, people still had a lot of questions about his intangibles, his ability to lead, and although there obviously are questions about Trubisky's production after 12 starts or whatever it was, it's exciting that to a man in that locker room, they rave about his leadership ability. So that was kind of the point there. I didn't mean to take a shot at Jay Cutler, just kidding around. Bob, just a couple minutes left. You made another great point, and maybe it's kind of the splash of cold water on the Trubisky thing here and all the excitement of this offense, but you're working on we're working on two magazines simultaneously, our off-season stuff, the preview and fantasy magazines. You're writing all the Bears content, of course, and I understand you just wrapped up the fantasy page for the Chicago Bears, and you kind of stumbled onto something sort of interesting that maybe suggests this isn't going to be an instant coffee type deal with this offense.
Yeah, this is definitely going to be a process when you look at, and I really hadn't noticed this until the other day, that potentially the top five receivers in this offense, the top five guys that Mitch Trubisky is going to be throwing the ball to, he has never played a single snap in a regular season NFL game with any of these guys. Obviously, Allen Robinson, Taylor Gabriel, and Trey Burton were not in Chicago last year, but Kevin White and Cam Meredith, who are the next two guys up, were both injured before Mitch Trubisky took over in week five. Kevin White played one game. Cam Meredith didn't play any. Mitch Trubisky threw to these guys in training camp and maybe directed a ball or two toward them in the preseason, but never played a regular season snap with any of what looked to be the top five receivers in this offense next year. So there's going to be a lot of getting to know you moments in the offseason and in training camp and in preseason. And when you're trying to acclimate yourself with five receivers, that's a process, and that may take a while. So I think it'll be imperative for the Bears to get Mitch Trubisky as many snaps as they can in training camp, in OTAs, in the mini camps, and everywhere else you can get him experience with these guys, because it's, he did a great job last year, but he's starting all over now. He'll be learning his third offense in 3 years, from North Carolina to last year with the Bears to now with Mark Helfrich as the coordinator and Matt Nagy calling the plays and implementing the offense. So, he's going to be doing a lot of homework in the offseason. The good thing is coaches have always raved about his work ethic off the field, how he's the first guy in and the last guy out, and that, I think, will really serve him well going forward.
Bob, a ton of outstanding points in there for sure. It's really fascinating to think about. And I get it. Anyone who watched this Bears offense last year can appreciate Ryan Pace taking the nuclear route and blowing things up as dramatically as you just alluded to. My last one for you here, and just kind of sticking with that topic, is that maybe part of the reasoning in bringing in someone like Chase Daniel, who is so experienced under Matt Nagy, because you're knowing that Trubisky's going to need all these reps, he's going to need all this time rapport building with the new receivers, and if you've got someone who already knows knows the ropes so well, maybe Chase Daniel's going to get even less reps than a normal backup would?
Yeah, and clearly, Matt Nagy can't spend every minute with with Mitch Trubisky, and neither can Mark Helfrich, the offensive coordinator. The good thing is Chase Daniel is essentially a coach on the field, and you're right, he doesn't need the reps in training camp. He needs a few. He knows the offense, though. But yeah, he's going to be a help, not only because he doesn't need a lot of snaps in practice or in preseason games, but because he's going to be with Mitch Trubisky 100% of the time when they're on the field together. And that's, in essence, just having another coach to work with Trubisky and to get him to learn this. And Chase Daniel said it when he was signed. It's incredibly hard to play quarterback in this league, and it's incredibly hard, even harder, to do it when you're a young guy and you're first learning the offense. So, you know, a lot of people think they overpaid for Chase Daniel. I'm one of them, but he could wind up being well worth what they paid to get him just for his ability to help Trubisky off the field and to coach him up.
Yeah, I mean, Bob, I think they probably overpaid for a lot of these offseason additions, but that's the nature of free agency. And just getting back to your point, maybe this is a good way to put a bow on things. When you have a cost-controlled rookie quarterback, someone you believe is going to really produce for you over the next 3 or 4 years on that friendly deal, it allows you to spend in other areas, and you know you're not going to be tied up in terms of the cap at the quarterback position, or at least the QB1 position there for a while. So I think in the year 2018 in the NFL under the new CBA, we're seeing more and more the importance of that, and just one more reason why there is legitimate excitement surrounding these Bears and their young potential franchise passer. All right, Bob, let's get to the important stuff very quick on the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. He's Bob Laguerre. I am Arthur Arkish, and we're about to let Bob go and welcome Hub Arkish into the discussion, but I got to ask, are you drinking the, well, you don't really need to drink the Masters Kool-Aid. It's pretty exciting on its own every year, but it seems like this year is especially exciting. Are you watching Tiger? Are you curious to see Lefty? What's the storyline you'll be following this week at Augusta?
Well, the storyline is right now I could probably name 4 professional golfers, and maybe by the end of this week, because I am interested in it, I might be able to name 8. So, you know, if a non-golf guy like me is interested in the Masters, which I am this year, then I can just imagine what people who are really into it are thinking this week. And if you read some of the storylines, it is pretty interesting. I think I forget what the tournament was a couple weeks ago that Tiger led on the final day, and the ratings there were twice as high as what they are for any other tournament. And you know, Tiger just brings a whole different aspect to the game of golf. And, you know, he's a guy that, as much as I make fun of my kids and my brother-in-law for watching golf on TV, I'll probably be doing a lot of that this weekend.
Well, you nailed it. I'm actually a non-golf guy too, and don't really follow it closely either, but I'm just sensing a palpable buzz around these Masters, and I think I am going to carve out a little bit of time this weekend too to see what all the fuss is about. So, Bob, great stuff as always. Really appreciate it. I should let the listeners know that Bob Laguerre's NFL Mock Draft 1.0 drops tomorrow at ProFootballWeekly.com, tomorrow, Friday, April 6th. Make sure you check that out. He's already done a 7-round Bears mock, but we're gonna have him dip his toe into the entire NFL waters and see what he comes up with. So looking forward to that, Bob. We really appreciate your time, and we will look forward to chatting with you again next week on the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. Up next on the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast, Hub Arkish is back, getting ready to drop some Bears knowledge on y'all. And I guess let's just get started and have Hub drop some Bears knowledge on everyone. How you doing today?
I'm good. How are you, Ed?
Everything is just dandy. I'm not quite as panicked as many Bears fans to learn that Jordan Howard pulled all the Bears photos off of his Instagram account. I joked with Bob Laguerre. If anyone on this podcast should have known about that and not had to find out about it through other avenues, it would be me, but I'm not on Instagram. So anyway, this has happened, and Hub, what does it mean?
Well, for someone who is barely Twitter and has never Facebook, you know, I don't think it means anything.
Let me tell you, Hub, Instagram is another social media app that people use mainly for photos. I know you've at least heard of it, and I'm kind of half kidding, but let's provide some context. Obviously, there were rumblings that the Bears could look into trading Jordan Howard. I mentioned with Bob, there was a report that maybe a Jarvis Landry-Howard swap could happen between the Bears and Dolphins. That never happened, but you know, when this type of stuff happens, it kind of it makes you wonder if there were smoke behind some of those fires early in the offseason.
Yeah, and it suggests to me that it has absolutely nothing to do with anything. There really wasn't even any smoke around the Jarvis Landry thing. It was a bad rumor. I go back to something I think we talked about a couple of weeks ago. I have heard reports, and not a lot, but more than one, that there may be a couple people at Halas Hall who aren't convinced that Jordan Howard is a franchise back. I can't tell you who they are. I do not believe it's Ryan Pace or Matt Nagy. But I think that some of their lieutenants at least asked the question, and so you never completely rule out any of this. But then you got to stop and ask yourself another question, which is, you know that Tariq Cohn can't be an every down back. You know Benny Cunningham isn't an every down back. So what's the point of trading Jordan Howard? You've got a guy who's been in the league 2 years. He's had two Pro Bowl seasons. And none of it makes any sense. You're not going to get, you drafted him in the fifth round, and in spite of those first two Pro Bowl level seasons, you're not going to get a first or a second round pick. Maybe you'd get a third. I don't know. There's just not a lot of logic to it. Unless the Bears know something that nobody else knows and are convinced that Saquon Barkley is there at number eight, which isn't going to happen, or that they think that they can take a Sony Michel or a Ronald Jones at eight, which I think would be insane, it just doesn't make any sense. And then, the original source of the report was someone who I think when it comes to the Bears has gotten a lot more wrong than they've gotten right over the last year or two, as far as this Instagram thing. Again, I don't know much about Instagram, but I assume that some people might clean it out like an email box, and there could be an explanation absolutely as simple as that. So at least from the moment everything we know, I wouldn't read anything into it at all.
Hub, do you think that Jordan Howard has an untapped, more untapped potential, or has yet to reach his ceiling? I mean, he's only, 24 years old, entering year three thereabouts. But what about him as a pass catcher? Have you seen enough red flags with the drops and the inconsistency that you're maybe wondering whether the light bulb's ever going to go on for him? Or is it way too soon for that?
Yeah, I don't think there's enough drops to say he's bad at it. There have been, frustrating drops. There's no question about that. But I think he could still be a serviceable pass catcher. But I think the better answer to your question is he's never gotten 300 carries in a season, which is what you'd want a franchise back to get. And so, yes, the ceiling is still higher. Now, untapped potential, are there new moves coming? Is he suddenly going to become a breakaway threat? Is he going to get faster? No, probably not, but I don't think we've seen his best production yet. And so when you've got the change of pace weapons like a Tariq Cohn and a Benny Cunningham who they just re-signed, I don't know why you wouldn't be happy with Jordan Howard as your number one back who can get you 1,300 yards. He's got the highest average per carry of any back in the league over the last two seasons. I do believe Gurley might have caught him with his big year this year, but I think he's still number one. So for his time in the league, I don't know what more he can give you.
Yeah, we're on the same page. I think all three of us on the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast, and he's Hub Arkish, I'm Arthur Arkish, just got done chatting with Bob LeGarrette. Sounds like we are all on the same page with this. I teed it up to Bob this way. I'll just throw it back to you. If it does turn out that the Bears don't kind of envision Jordan Howard, and again, it's a huge if, there's not any real credible reasons to think so, but it's a big discussion right now. If it does turn out that they don't kind of view him as part of their plan, does that qualify as the first big red flag for Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace together, or have there been others? I would be really disheartened if that was kind of their view of him, because to me it would say that they're kind of too rigid to make it work with someone who's already clearly shown that he can make it work.
Well, I'm not sure when you say qualify as a red flag. I don't know where we're going with that. I mean, at the end of the day, again, he's done what he's done. He's clearly a starting running back in the NFL. He's a Pro Bowl back, and so the only reason to part with him, it wouldn't be stylistically, it would be because you think there's somebody who's going to give you more production. I mean, you don't get rid of a guy like that just because you know, you want to run a different offense. Let's look at it that way.
Some guys do. I mean, Chip Kelly got run out of the league for doing that. I mean, we've seen other coaches do that, so it could totally be a stylistic reason, no?
But think about what you just said. Chip Kelly got run out of the league for it. Why would somebody else do it again?
Well,
you know, it doesn't make any sense.
Coaches are stubborn, right. That's why I called it a red flag, and that's why I think it would be disheartening, I guess was my point.
Well, those are two different things. I'd be disheartened, too. I think it would be a foolish move. But I just wasn't sure when we said red flag. So, listen, at the end of the day, the only reason you move a player is because you've got a better option or you think you can get a better option. And I don't know what that would be right now. And that's why I refuse to get caught up every time there's some, you know, kind of warning flag that people see. And more than that, you know, talking to whoever I can, we just spent 3 days at the owners meetings, had a pretty good amount of time with both Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy. And there's absolutely no indication whatsoever, you know, that they see that. It seems maybe the area they're the happiest with on their ball club is they continue to address everything else. So,
sure.
You know, can't ever rule it out, but I don't think anything's imminent there.
Okay, yeah, and that's what makes it obviously such a tricky kind of thing to discuss. It's all hypotheticals we're speaking, and of course nothing's imminent. But one more point on this. It's sort of a, I don't know if it's a double-edged sword is the way to call it, but it's especially fascinating because it's such a deep running back draft class, but that cuts both ways. That both hurts the Bears' leverage and what they would potentially be able to get for a Jordan Howard because there's so much talent and depth. But then on the flip side, maybe that's what's fueling their belief. And again, this is all just speculation. But if they believe that they could find something better, well, there's this, you know, potentially epic running back class just 3 weeks out that they might have designs on finding that guy in. So it's an interesting debate. And frankly, hopefully it'll die down soon and the Bears will put it to rest permanently by saying, we love Jordan Howard. He's our guy. But we'll just have to wait and see on that. Hub, what else is shaking? You released your mock draft 2.0 this week, your full NFL round one mock, and you switched up your pick at number 8 for the Bears. Why don't you tell the listeners who it is and what your thinking was there?
Well, my thinking is that, you know, and the pick is Tremaine Edmonds. He is of the guys that people try and identify with the Bears. Quentin Nelson, you know, I'm a Minka Fitzpatrick guy, Tremaine Edmonds, Calvin Ridley. Of that group, to me, Edmonds is the most certain other than Ridley to be there. I think 8 is just too high for Ridley, and with what the Bears have done in free agency, it would make no sense. So I eliminate him. And then, you know, I think Fitzpatrick is one of the 7 best players in the draft, but because the quarterbacks are going to go high, I suppose there's a good chance he's there too. Edmonds is a guy who everybody agrees on his traits. Everybody agrees this guy has certain God-given gifts that could make him one of the great outside linebacker pass rushers in a 3-4 defense, that he could probably play inside as well. He could play anywhere at linebacker. Could be an interesting fit. The problem is he never looked like that guy at Virginia Tech. And so another one of these reaches for a guy with tremendous traits who may not be a tremendous football player. And when you look at what Ryan Pace has done in the first round of each of his 3 drafts, that's the player he's picked. And so while it wouldn't necessarily be my first, and I'm not saying it's a bad choice. I mean, we still don't know, in spite of the fact that people keep trying to indict him for it. We don't even know if Kevin White was a bad pick. The injuries are not Ryan Pace's fault. Leonard Floyd has shown enough flashes to think he may still prove to be a good pick, but he's only played 12 and 10 games respectively in his first 2 seasons. Mitch Trubisky in the 12 starts we didn't expect him to get as a rookie looked really promising. So that's very exciting, although still a long way to go. And so when you look at what Ryan Pace does with these top 10 picks, Tremaine Edmonds to me is the guy that probably fits that pattern the best. Again, wouldn't be my first choice for that pick. And I do preface it by saying if Nelson is there, I absolutely think the Bears will take Quentin Nelson at 8. There's 3 teams in front of them, you know, starting with the Giants at 2 and the Broncos at 5 and the Colts at 6. And I just don't see all 3 of them passing on Quentin Nelson.
Yeah, and let me throw a 4th team in there, Hub. I don't know how the Buccaneers pass either. You look at their offensive line, they need to get Jameis Winston going. I know the pass defense stinks too, but I believe Quentin Nelson wouldn't last past pick number 7. Correct me if I'm wrong here. You had Nelson in 1.0 going to the Bears. Is that right? You've done 2 mocks now. I believe I've got that right.
No, I had Minka Fitzpatrick going to the Bears in my first draft.
All right, excuse me. Thank you. So now we've got a nice variety. So Hub went Fitzpatrick and then Edmonds. Bob Laguerre has went with Tremaine Edmonds. Eric Edholm, our colleague, has done two mock drafts. He had Marcus Davenport in the first one and Tremaine Edmonds in the second one. And then I had my first mock with Marcus Davenport, another traits pass rusher type. But it's just kind of a chocolate or vanilla thing between Edmonds and Davenport in a lot of people's eyes. Hub, is there any concern that Edmonds maybe is too similar to Leonard Floyd? I mean, you just sort of described Leonard Floyd coming out of Georgia in a lot of ways. Could maybe play inside and outside. Great talent, not a great football player yet. I hear so many similarities there.
Well, a couple things there, Arthur. First of all, I would argue, I think it's a little more than chocolate vanilla when we talk about Davenport.
Well, they're different players. You know, right. They're different players.
Well, but even more than that, I'm not sure you can find enough front office folks who see enough of the traits in the ceiling to make Davenport a top 10 pick. I think he's an interesting player. Mm-hmm. He's going to be a first rounder. But you look at all the experts, and they've got guys with traits like Edmonds, like Fitzpatrick in the top 10. I don't think you find as much Davenport top 10. I think that Ryan Pace would have a really hard time defending that pick at 8. I think even to himself, you know, let alone to other folks. Now, you know, when you talk about the Edmonds comparison to, and by the way, that doesn't mean he wouldn't do it. Believe me, I'm not pretending that that's an impossibility. You just never know with these guys. But that way, he just doesn't feel the same to me as a traits prospect type guy as Edmonds does. I mean, there are people, I've seen Edmonds as high as 3 or 4 in this draft on some people's list of best available athlete, and that may be. And so that's the second part of your question is certainly there are similarities to Leonard Floyd, but where I think the difference comes in is I don't recall anybody projecting Floyd inside, even though he played it, you know, in college at Georgia. I think everybody felt that his big upside in the NFL was purely as an outside pass rusher. And one of the things that's been so interesting about how Vic Fangio has used him, more his second year than his first year, is he tried to make a three-down backer out of him, and he had him dropping into coverage and playing the run. He was doing it fairly well, you know. And so, again, an excitement there. When you look at Edmonds, here's a guy who truly could be a three-down inside backer. As a matter of fact, the thing that's missing the most from his college production is sacks. He has not shown to be a great pass rusher at Virginia Tech, and that's what the Bears need, and that's the reason that he scares me at number 8. I think that everybody felt Leonard Floyd, worst case, was going to be a 7, 8, 9 sack guy, and he could be a double-digit sack guy, and I still think that. When I look at Edmonds, I don't know. You know, yeah, he's got the traits, he's got the ability, but you can't find the tape. It's kind of like trading up to draft Mitch Trubisky, you know? Sure. I mean, just didn't know, you know, was he really good enough to go number 2 overall? Now, the 12-game sample's rookie year suggests that, yeah, you know, it wasn't – I still think he could have gotten the 3 and it was a better pick, but that's old news now. So, you know, Edmonds, I think, he is similar to Floyd in some ways. I think he's different. He's definitely bigger. You don't worry with Edmonds about, you know, the difficulty putting weight on him, getting him stronger. You always want to get these guys stronger in NFL weight training programs, but it's not as big a concern with him. So at least in that regard, you take one of the concerns you had with Floyd off the board. So they're similar picks, but not identical picks.
So everyone gets so excited. He's Hub Arkush. I'm Arthur Arkush on the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. Check us out on iTunes. Subscribe over there and leave us a rating and a review while you're at it. We would really appreciate it. Hub, everyone gets so excited about, and frankly, no one wants to be drafting in the top 10. The hope is that you get them right and you're not there anymore. But there's some additional buzz that comes with having a top 10 pick, number 8 overall. But, you know, I'd argue that, you know, you're gonna build up a sustained winner just as easily by hitting on some of this day 2, maybe a day 3 pick here and there. We know we've seen Ryan Pace do good work there, but where's kind of your intrigue level at? What are sort of your big goals you're thinking after pick 8? Not necessarily specific players, although if you have them, I'd love to hear them. But what should kind of be the general plan of attack? What should be the mission that Pace needs to accomplish after April 26th here in a couple weeks?
Well, you know what's interesting to me, Arthur, even before we get to after April 26th, is that, you know, because the Bears have been so bad for so long and need so much help, you know, each of the last 3 years, a lot of folks have felt trading down was the way to go. And I've always tried to caution everybody, yeah, that sounds great, but you can't do it by yourself. You've got to have a willing trade partner. You've got to being a you know, basically a seller's market. And I think this is the year that they have the best chance, and it might make the most sense to trade down. Because now, again, if three or four of these quarterbacks go ahead of them, you're talking about possibly getting the best player in the draft, or certainly one of the two, three, four best players in the draft at number eight, and there will be other teams that will have some interest in coming up and doing that. I mean, if you'd asked me a week ago, is there any chance that Bradley Chubb would be there, I'd say absolutely not. Now, there's still very little chance, but, you know, a Chubb, a Barkley, a Fitzpatrick, a Nelson, I think those are the four best players in this draft, and one or two of them are going to be there. And now you've got the Patriots with multiple first-round picks. You've still got Buffalo sitting there. You know, they may have to come up to eight to get that fourth quarterback. Arizona might want to come up from 15 to get a quarterback if the fourth one's still there, or somehow the third one is still there. So I would keep an eye on that. I think this is the year that Ryan Pace could get fat. And the nice thing about it is that with what they've done in free agency, they've really addressed, you know, their biggest need, which was potentially game-changing pass catchers.
Right.
You know, re-signed their cornerbacks. And so as much as they need pass rush and they need interior offensive line, people rarely even look at interior offensive line in the first round. I mean, that's a position you can get a great guard at 15 or 25 or even in the second round.
Sure.
You know, I would keep an eye on the trade down possibility. I think that they'll be looking more aggressively, and I wouldn't be shocked to see it happen this year.
Yeah, of course, the Bears don't have a third round pick. They dealt that to the Niners to go up and get Trubisky last year. We're relatively sure Ryan Pace would love to recoup that. And it looks like there is going to be some depth. There's not a lot of headliners in this draft after the few you just named, but it does seem like there's some decent depth. So the middle rounds will be big too. Hub, only a couple minutes left here on the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. What happened quicker? Did the Bears fans suddenly anoint the Bears to contention and this offense to possibly being a great one after this free agency? Or are Cubs fans panicking because their team set the strikeout record, I believe, through five games, and they're not scoring much? And it seems, although it's only five games, there's probably a bit of unwarranted concern here in Cubby Nation.
Yeah, I mean, Cubs fans who are panicking either need to find a shrink to prescribe some good medication for them. I don't pretend to know what's going to happen, but Rick Tallender had an analogy in a Sun-Times column on Tuesday of this week that I would have never thought of, but it's like the best analogy I think I've ever heard of something like this, which is that the first five games of the Major League Baseball season are the exact equivalent prorated to the first half of the first game of the NFL season. Huh. So at halftime of the game of the season, do you write your NFL team off? I mean, it's just dumb. You know, has it been enjoyable the first week for Cubs fans? No. You know, and the punchline is you can talk all you want about the strikeouts, but, you know, if Yu Darvish and John Lester, you know, pitch like this, then and Quintana, then yeah, they're in trouble. But does anybody believe that's going to happen? You know, so take a breath, give it a chance. Let's talk on May 10th, May 15th. I think we'll have a better, you know, certainly a better sample size and a better feel for where this team is at. And I'm pretty confident that they'll be, you know, looking better than they do at 2-3 when we talk. You know, as far as the Bears being contenders, my common sense tells me, again, you know, take a pill, folks. You're still a year away. But there are just so many clear, real comparisons between these Bears and last year's Rams and last year's Eagles that I don't think you can rule it out either. You know, now they're not going to win the Super Bowl, which I know the Eagles did, and of course that was year two with Doug Peterson and Carson Wentz, but it is year two for Mitch Trubisky with a rookie coach in Matt Nagy, much like it was for Jared Goff and Sean McVay last year. And, you know, honestly, the Rams' defense wasn't very good last year. It wasn't overloaded with talent. That's why they've gone as crazy as they have now in free agency and in the trade market. And I do think the Bears' defense actually is better coming into this year than the Rams was last year, not knowing how Wade Phillips would be able to coach a 40 front and hybrids until he get more to his pure 30 front. Offensively, you know, the Bears don't have a Todd Gurley. But I think Carson Wentz is a much better player than Jared Goff, and I think Trubisky could reach what Goff did in his second year. And they've made these moves at receiver just like the Rams did. So, you know, people forget the Bears defense was a top 10 defense last year. So I don't think you can rule out a run at a wild card spot. I do think it's a year away. I think there's other things to fix, and you know, Bears fans need to remember, yes, Matt Nagy's exciting, but he hasn't even run a practice yet, let alone coached a game. So we'll see what happens. But I think it's premature to talk about contention, but I also think that you better be careful ruling it out, because you can look pretty foolish if they're suddenly sitting there with 9-10 wins at the end of the year.
All right. Well, there you have it. We will be looking forward to continuing to discuss it all. The draft is fast approaching. Another great opportunity for the Bears to improve their football team and maybe make that contention possibility even a little bit more real in the coming weeks. So that's going to do it today on the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. He is Hub Arkish. I'm Arthur Arkish. We really appreciate you being with us. One more reminder to check us out on iTunes, both of our PFW podcasts, all three of them actually, NFL, Bears, and Fantasy Football. And we really do appreciate that. And I should also mention that we just launched our Pro Football Weekly Draft database, where you can get hundreds of updated Greg Gabriel scouting reports. We're asking for a very small fee this year for the first time, but we think it's extremely reasonable, a great deal, and we've worked very, very hard to set this up for you. We hope you guys are going to support it. Go check that out at Pro Football Weekly. It's one of many new and exciting things happening for draft time. And Hub, why don't you say goodbye to the listeners? I know you got a lot of other things to get to.
All righty, goodbye, everybody. It's fun. No, it's always good. And particularly, guys, let me go a step further what Arthur said. You can get to the in-depth scouting reports and stuff behind the paywall of the draft site literally for 99 cents to check it out. And an entire season's pass is $5, which is actually $3 less than we always charge for the update magazine. So it's really even cheaper, and it's more accessible, and it's being updated every day. So definitely get over there and check it out.
All right. Thank you, Hub. And thank you, listeners. Thank you, Dan Mott, our producer. We will be back with you next week on the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast.